It's so good to see you this evening. Glad to have you here. Mindful of those of our number who are traveling, especially the Pattons, a difficult journey in a number of ways. Mindful of them, but glad that you're able to be with us, and especially for our visitors. We're glad that you're here. I started this morning talking about godly parents and used a couple of fairly obscure Old Testament examples to illustrate what I think it means to be a godly parent. I want to continue in that vein, looking at another obscure Old Testament example, but one who's a real encouragement to me. And I want to level both barrels now at the husbands, at the fathers, at the men. And I want to talk about what it means to be a real man. And by no means am I offering myself as an example of that. I know all too well my shortcomings, but I offer this man up as an example, and he inspires me, and I hope he can inspire and encourage you all as well as we try to, as men, as we try to become this kind of a person. Ladies, as you, especially young ladies, as you're considering dating and other things as well, you know, eventually a marriage, I invite you to look for a man like this, someone who will be something like the man we're going to talk about. I was talking with Mike Brock after services this morning about just one of the things that we preachers tend to do is that we speak about what we need to hear ourselves, and then we kind of hope everybody else can stand to hear it too, and this is really one of those sermons. A real man is sought by many. The Marines say they're looking for a few good men, and lots of places are corporations and whatever. They're just like a fellow who's worth his weight, who is a good man. But they also say that they're hard to find. And I always like to go to this verse to show how hard a good man is to find, but it really is tougher on the women than it is on the men. It's going back to the writer of Ecclesiastes. He says, "Which yet my soul seeketh, but I find not. One man among a thousand I have found, but a woman among all those I've not found." So he didn't have, but we know he had trouble, I guess. Solomon had trouble with women anyway, so maybe he was a little jaded and short at this time with the ladies. But he says it's hard to find a real man. It's hard to find one of these. The question comes, how do you get one? How do you make one? How does a person get formed up to be what God would call a real man? And do we look to the different organizations in society that, are fellowship of men, and do we think that maybe that's what will do it? Will it be the service clubs? Will it be the athletics that they participate in? Will it be the schools that form them? And I'll put before you, first and foremost, that it's got to be God that makes them, and it will be God's men already that makes more men. It'll be by his teaching. It'll be by their example. It'll be by the church and what they do. It is first and foremost our responsibility to raise up men that are going to be real godly men. The example that I want to offer to you this evening is a character found in the book of Ruth. And that short book of just four chapters, which occurred sometime in the period of the Judges, has a character named Boaz. And I've spoken about him before. I was checking my records, and I think it was some 3 or 4 years ago I spoke about him before. But you could tell I need to hear it again. That's why you get to hear it again. And hopefully, though, it'll be encouraging. I used to not, I try not to ever repeat a sermon. And I found that my favorite things, and I think some of the most important things, were staying in the drawer. And I was just wound up preaching the obscure and the new. And that's not always a great thing. Some of these lessons you'll see more often than others. And this one is certainly one of those for me. So an obscure Old Testament example of rare value, though. Real value and real importance for practically what does it mean to be a man. The first chapter of the book of Ruth sets the stage for what's happening here. There was a family, a mother and a father, and two sons that left the land of Bethlehem in Judah, where they were from, and they went down into Moab. it seems it was because of a famine in the land that they went there. And while there, the two sons married Moabite women. And then great hardships fell upon this family in that all the men died. The father died, then the two sons died. And really, back then, I guess, even more so than now, the husbands were the providers. And these women, left without a man between them, were in really destitute in dire straits, destitute circumstances. They were at a loss, and they didn't know what they were going to do. But Naomi, the widow, now the mother, encouraged the girls to just go back to their own households. She really didn't have anything to offer them anymore. And one daughter did. Orpah said that she would go back. But Ruth, in beautiful words, says, no, she's going to go with her mother-in-law, and she is going to stand by Naomi. And I do not have the King James Version in front of me this evening, but especially Ruth chapter 1, verses 16 and 17 in the King James are some of the most beautiful words put together in the English language, as far as I'm concerned, not only for how they sound, but for what they convey. But in the New King James, it says, "Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you, for wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I'll be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you and me." This passage is often used as a pledge in a wedding ceremony, and rightfully so, for it conveys a loyal, committed love of a following of one of another. But it's difficult to imagine that this was originally a bereaved daughter-in-law speaking to her mother-in-law. It's incredibly beautiful. Well, they go back, and Naomi was a name that I guess meant something happy, and when she got home, she refused to be called Naomi anymore. She said, "Call me Mara, call me bitter, because what's happened to me since I left has not been good." But there these two women are at the close of chapter 1 of the book of Ruth, back in Naomi's home country, a foreign country for Ruth, and without much hope of any kind of a future. I want to just go through what happens as Boaz comes on the scene in chapter 2 and point out to you time after time things that we see openly and quickly about this man that are of such value to us. In chapter 2, verse 1, Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a man of great wealth, one of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go into the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Their only hope was gleaning for income, you know, and that was to go after the harvesters, after the reapers in the field, and find what was too small or inconsequential for the professional reapers to harvest, would have just been spilled along the wayside, to gather that up and let that be their meager fare. And she says here, "In whoever's field I'm, or whoever's sight I might find favor." She really doesn't know where she's going. And what a destitute situation to find herself in. Well, she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. "Behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, 'The Lord be with you.'" And that's the first thing he says, and that's one of the greatest things about him. He starts right off with what is, you might just say, is a greeting, but it can also be construed as a prayer, and it is a godly wish, and right up front you know where this man stands with respect to the Lord. He is not hiding his faith. He is not wondering if those around might reflect, is this a good group? Can I speak about the Lord here? He comes right out and he says, "The Lord be with you." And he's open about what it is that he believes and where he stands. Well, and they answered him, as often is the case. If someone sets the tone, it's answered in kind, "The Lord bless you." And right away, the stage is set for a godly interaction. So openly godly is the first thing we note about this man. Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And I just wonder, he must have known what was going on in his affairs to take note so quickly of a young woman who just happened to be not even working for him, but gleaning in his field. And so he says, you know, "Who is this young woman?" It implies to me that he is diligent in his affairs. Whatever it is that our hand finds to do, we are to do it, men, with all our might. For there is no work or knowledge or labor or wisdom in the grave where we are going. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, I believe verse 10. In this world, whatever we find to do, we are to do it diligently. That word implies that there is effort involved, regularly visited, to be on top of whatever it is you do. If you're digging a ditch, dig it diligently. Whatever you're doing, do it diligently. That's what Boaz did. And it just, you know, if he can notice this little detail of a new person showing up, I bet he was on top of everything else he had going. Well, the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, "It's the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. And she said," this is how she got to be there, "please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So she came and has continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house." He's impressed with her diligence in what it was that she was doing. So Boaz said to Ruth, "You will listen, my daughter, will you not?" And I appreciate here that he's giving respect to this woman who's in a helpless and somewhat hopeless condition. I think it's a great thing that he's a respecter of even the least of those in society. And certainly in this time, there was no formal power, position power, that Ruth held. He says to her, "Do not go to glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close by my young women." He goes on to say, "Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn." Do you see what he's doing? Do you see what he's doing to this girl, this woman? He is protecting her in this helpless situation to which she has come into his field, literally. He sees his role not to take advantage and how vulnerable she would have been to that, but rather to stand up and to help and to protect this one. And he already put the word out to the young men who might be of a mind to bother her, "Don't even think about it. You leave her alone." And you got to appreciate the stand that he's taking for this, the least of those around him. In verse 10, she appreciates it. She falls on her face and bows down to the ground and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I'm a foreigner?" And do you see there that she's not even of his people, of his country. There's either a racial or a cultural thing that stands between them here. And she's amazed that he's being so kind to her. But Boaz answered in verse 11, said to her, "It's been fully reported to me all that you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother in the land of your birth and have come to a people whom you did not know. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." Do you see two things here? First of all, he has heard of what she has done, this good deed that she has done, leaving her own people to be true and faithful to her mother-in-law, and he appreciates that good. Gentlemen, we need to do that. We need to find good and appreciate it. I think especially as fathers, there's a tendency for us, and I know I'm guilty of this, to look at the shortcomings and to concentrate on those. But you've got to find the good and appreciate that and reward that too. And that's what he does. He appreciates the good. And then look at this. He says, "You've come under God's wings for protection." Well, in what sense? She came into his field, and he is God's servant. And indirectly, God is protecting her. Directly, he's protecting her. But he sees his actions as an extension of God, an extension of God's will. Wonderful, wonderful posture and stance he's taking here in this situation. In Verse 13, let me find favor in your sight, Ruth says, my Lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant. Another thing I didn't even get up on the screen. There's so much more that I haven't listed this evening, that he is not only respectful, he is kind to her. Though I am not one of your maidservants. And Boaz said to her at mealtime, come here, eat of the bread, and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar. I was thinking as I was reading this that it's only been recently that you go to Italian restaurant, and you know, there's the little thing there, and where they put the vinegar in, and you dip your bread in. And I'm thinking, that's really neat. They've come up with that in the past couple of years, and here about 3,000 years ago, it was a good idea, and it was working real well. She sat beside the reapers, and he passed parched grain to her, and she ate and was satisfied and kept some back. He was so generous to her. When she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves. Do not reproach her. Don't let her just go after the leavings after you've gone through and harvested. You let her go and have some of the stuff you haven't harvested, which would make her job a lot easier. And, of course, she'd get more and get more quickly. And let some grain fall from the bundles purposely for her. When are you going to hear a boss say that? Do your job worse so she'll be all right. I mean, be sloppy when you go forth to harvest and leave some big piles so she can pick it up. That's what he's saying. And don't rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening, beat out what she had gleaned. That was the step for refining it so she'd get right down to the kernel she wanted to keep. And it was about an ephah of barley. And that doesn't mean much to us, but that was a good day's work for a gleaner. And she took it up and went to the city to her mother-in-law. And the mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. And she brought out and gave her what she had kept back after she had been satisfied. That was from the meal. And her mother-in-law said to her, and sometimes we'll read things and we won't get it quite right, you know. Her mother-in-law said to her, where have you gleaned today? And she didn't say that. She said, where have you gleaned today? I mean, whoa, you did all right. You know, what's going on here? And where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you. So she said to her mother-in-law with whom she had worked, she said, the man's name with whom I had worked today is Boaz. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, blessed be he of the Lord, who's not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead. Naomi said to her, the man is a relative of ours, one of our near kinsmen. And you'd have to go back to Deuteronomy chapter 25 and verse 5 through 10 to see what the duty of a near kinsman was. But he would have been the next in line to raise up an heir to him. There's a very special meaning denoted by this term near kinsman. And she's invoking that and saying, you know, he is a special relationship to us that's going to be explained further as we go on through this. But Ruth the Moabitess said, he also said to me, you shall stay close by my young men until they finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it's good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women and that people do not meet you in any other field. I guess I've gotten a little behind in my slides here. Let me catch up. We see by his taking notice and being so kind to this woman from another country, there is no prejudice with him. He has not judged beforehand those of another country, those of another color, perhaps. And we see also that he's generous to the needy in what he asks his young men to do or not do. Don't reap well, leave piles behind. He's very generous to her, gives her to eat as well. Okay, in chapter 3, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? Now Boaz, whose young women you're with, is he not our kinsman? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. And so, therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself, put on your best garment, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies. You shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do. And this seems awkward when I read this. This seems very forward, and like this is a suggestive situation. But really, this is a scriptural thing, and it is not improper. She is going to ask him to fulfill the role of a near kinsman, to take her as wife, and to raise up heirs to her dead husband. That's what she's going to do. But with her mother-in-law's coaxing, she just happens to pick a time when he might be really likely to say yes. Right after he's had a good meal, after he's had a little to drink, and then you just go ahead and you ask him then. And in that situation, it's going to be dark, and why not? You know, it sounds like he'll just he'll go for it then. And that's what they're purposing. And you can't really fault them for picking the opportune moment to go ahead and to be this forward. And so that's what she recommends. And Ruth says in verse 5, "All that you say to me, I will do." And she trusts her mother-in-law in this situation. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all her mother-in-law instructed her. And after Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was cheerful, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Now it happened at midnight that the man was startled. Another place that the Bible gives into understatement. Hello! Yeah, what's going on here? And he turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet. And he said to her, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a near kinsman." And so her intention is clear. Marry me, raise up heirs to my departed husband. In this situation, she makes that request of him. Look at what he does. And I'll put to you, men, that there are lots of different ways that you can judge another man and what that man truly is and what he truly stands for. But I don't know that there's a better judge of character or a better time to judge a man than in the dark when he's alone with a vulnerable woman. And you really see what a person's made of here in this situation. And we see what Boaz is made of. He says in verse 10, "Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich." I already talked about generous to the needy. He's mindful of his duty, but get this, get how humble he is. He is touched that she would even consider him, for he is older than she is. And with all that he's got going for him, and all that he could have said, to be humble in that moment and to praise her is a wonderful thing. In verse 11, "Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman." Do you see what he's doing here? He's assuming the absolute best construction on what she has done. He's not calling her cheap or any kind of a tramp for coming and doing what she's done. She's a virtuous woman. And she's making a plea to God's law. And he sees it in that light. But there's a catch she doesn't know about. But he does. And I think lesser men in the darkness of the threshing floor, in the moment, might have just passed over this thing, but not Boaz. He says in verse 12, "It's true that I'm your near kinsman. However, there is a kinsman nearer than I." There's someone else who's first in line for this. And he needs to be considered. "Stay this night, and in the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a near kinsman for you, good, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I'll perform the duty for you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning. She arose before one could recognize another while it was still dark. He said to her, "Do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." He's safeguarding her reputation even in this, though nothing happened. He said to her, "Bring the shawl that is on you and hold it." And when she held it, he measured 6 ephahs of barley and laid it on her. And she went to the city. That was a good helping. So when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "Is that you, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done for her. And she said, "These 6 ephahs of barley he gave me, for he said to me, 'Do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" Then she said, this is Naomi, "Sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out. For the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day." He's a man of action and a man of reputation. Be that kind of a man. If someone asks you to do something, do it. And let them have the confidence, and may you have the reputation that if you have said that you're going to do something, people know it's going to get done. This is about having a good name and a good word, your word being good. That's what's going on. And she says Boaz is that kind of man. If he says he's going to get after it, he's going to get after it today. Well, and then, you know, we already know that he's by the book in what he does. But here in chapter 4 is the confrontation. And to make it a little quicker here, he calls before the elders of the town, he calls the other near kinsmen to account. He tells her that Ruth is asked for someone to fulfill the role of a near kinsman. You're first in line. You know there's a financial responsibility with this. If you want to do it, you're welcome to do it. And the other man says, I'm not in a financial position to do that. I don't have enough money to assume the financial part. And Boaz says, well, then I'll do it. And everybody know right here, in the formal, in the right way, that that's what's going to happen. And he settles that first. And then he goes ahead and he takes, in verse 13, Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. When he went into her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the women said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a near kinsman, and may his name be famous in Israel. May he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has borne him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her bosom and became a nurse to him. And the neighbor women gave him a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. And he is the father of Jesse, and he is the father of David. Yeah, that's right, King David. What an interesting lineage in this one on whom the Lord's favor and the kingdom settled. This woman, this foreigner, an Israelite woman, a Moabitess, was taken as a bride by Boaz, and it goes through and looks at the genealogy after that. This man was an outstanding example of what it is a man should be. And he inspires me, and I hope he inspires you as well. I wonder if you can read all of this. He is openly godly. He lets people know that he stands for the Lord wherever he stands. He is diligent, not lazy, in his affairs. He is a protector of the helpless. He appreciates good that he finds in people. He sees himself as God's servant, God's servant to do God's will in this world. He is unprejudiced. He is generous to the needy. He is mindful of his duty, his godly duty. He is humble. He assumes the best in the situations in which he finds himself. He is a man of action, has a reputation for getting things done. And he lives by the book. He does things right. He does it the way the law and the Bible says. And gentlemen, I hope you're as inspired by this as I. And I invite us all to rise to the standard of this somewhat obscure Old Testament example and to be the men that God is calling us to be. To be a real man in his standard, not just the world's standard. Well, who here this evening is subject to the call? What a joy, what a blessing to have a chance, as many chances as the Lord gives us to come back and to be right in His sight. We're so thankful for His forgiveness that He extends so often. Who this evening needs to come to the Lord for the first time or for the whatever time? All things are ready. We would love to help you if you just come while we stand and while we sing.